I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Mekhi Becton, ladies and gentlemen, human beings that large should not run as fast as Mekhi Becton did. And if you like people just abusing other humans, the Mekhi Becton tape is for you.
Denzel Mims with another monster score of 70 yards.
Quick pass to Crowder, trying to get him out of space. Slips a tackle, and there he goes. Crowder, it's a foot race, and Crowder is in there. A 69-yard touchdown.
Darnold escapes, trying to buy himself some time. End zone, it's caught. Incredible play by Darnold.
Hill hit immediately.
He got the handoff.
You know what?
The Q-inator.
Oh my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the TOJ Digital Studio, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And it's time for part three of the mailbag. So for that, we bring in the owner, the operator, the lead reporter, the whole shebang over at JetsInsider.com. And above all of that, a very big deal, Mr. Chris Nimbley. So let's jump right back into the mailbag. Next question comes in from Tristan Snowsill. He says, how do the Jets investigate slash interview Zach Wilson's character concerns, assuming they like him on tape? How can you tell someone's character? Well, let's start with the supposed character concerns. Now, let's make this clear. There could very well be things that we don't know about, but of the things that have been talked about so far, they seem sort of ridiculous. The fact that he comes from a rich family, so what? So did the Mannings, so did Andrew Luck, so did John Elway, so did plenty of other quarterbacks who turn out to be really good in the NFL. Not worried about that. Then the whole charge of him being a spoiled brat or not a leader. Well, when you talk to people that played with him or coached him who have come out and rebuked this, it doesn't seem to match up with what these reports are saying. This to me feels a lot like draft season smokescreen stuff where teams are throwing things out there because they want him to drop and maybe draft them themselves. We see this every year. But as far as other stuff that we may not know about, how do you go about finding that out? Let's put it this way. The Jets and all these other teams are billion-dollar enterprises. They've got private investigators. They can talk to everybody from his family members to his friends to his coaches to his teammates to the person who is his third-grade English teacher. If there's stuff to find, they can find it. It's no different than, as Jets fans since 1988 said in the comments, doing a security clearance for a government position. You go full blast because you're talking about somebody that you're going to be making a major investment in to be the face of your franchise, and you find out everything that you need to find out. But I'll say the stuff that we've heard so far wouldn't concern me at all. If there are other things, the Jets and other teams will likely find out about them before the draft. that's what happened with Josh Rosen. There were things that some people didn't really know about that were character concerns with him, above and beyond the nonsense that we heard on the surface. So if there's stuff underneath, these teams will figure it out because, as I said, they're billion-dollar enterprises. They've got tons of people that are paid to do this and that specialize in it. So they'll leave no stone unturned, especially when you're talking about a quarterback that might be picked at number two overall.
Yeah, they're going to call everybody on that BYU staff. They're going to get in touch with people from his high school coaching staff. They're going to talk to people from other schools that recruited him. They're going to talk to other schools that played him. The teams have FBI profiler type investigations into these players. Like you said, every stone's going to be overturned here and looked at. They're going to talk to everybody that they possibly can to get a good idea on this guy. All the character concerns we've heard about, like you said, it's basically he's super rich. He comes from a rich family. He's a spoiled brat. All right. What does that have to do with him playing football? It has absolutely nothing to do with him playing football. As you mentioned, other quarterbacks, most quarterbacks, I would venture to say, come from, parents with at least overly comfortable money. So that's not something. And listen, I grew up rich. Eric came from money. I know plenty of super spoiled people, and a lot of them are awful. But some of them are still completely responsible and go and do their job and work just as hard as everybody else. One thing I'll say is you brought up the idea that maybe, you know, teams are putting this stuff out there as smoke. And I don't think that's the case because scouts hate players that come from money. They hate it. NFL scouts, nothing will drive them crazier than being like, oh, but he came from money. And it doesn't matter how long they've been doing it, how many times they've seen somebody come from money, come and have a great career, or how many times they've seen kids come from nothing and still squander it. It doesn't matter. There's something ingrained in scouts where they have he comes from money, never mind. That's the mindset that a lot of scouts have. So I'm sure there is some smoke going on there, but I also just think scouts are dumb in that way. There's a difference between just coming from a rich family and being a complete spoiled brat. But also, NFL quarterbacks are kind of spoiled brats. They all kind of spoiled brats. They get spoiled. Like, that's – teams treat their quarterbacks that way, even if they don't act that way. So it's just a really weird thing to just have that as like a blatant reason not to draft somebody. You're going to have to give me more than he's from a rich family to tell me that a quarterback won't succeed in the NFL. But again, I do truly believe that these scouts truly believe that that matters. Some of them really do believe that it matters, but it's going to come down. They're going to talk to everyone they can at BYU. They're going to talk to other schools that recruited them. They're going to find out why they didn't press harder on it. They're going to do all that stuff. They're going to find that information out. And if they decide, all right, he's too big of a jerk for us to draft, we don't like him, all right, but it's not going to be, well, you know, if his dad just made $100,000 less a year, then we'd take him. That's not how it's going to turn out.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
And that is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Next question comes in from one of our favorites, Peter J. Dillard. By the way, Chris, I should say, the one thing I'm really going to miss about Gase being gone is no more usurper.
Yeah.
I may need Peter to randomly throw that word in anyway, just for the sake of it. He says, gentlemen, is there any scenario where the Jets keep Sam Darnold for a year, don't pick up his option, and draft a quarterback at number two anyway, basically allowing the team not to rush the rookie quarterback, especially if they pick Trey Lance? Also, what are they going to do at linebacker? These linebackers don't seem to fit Salah's system because they can't cover. So let's start with the first part of this. I think that if they keep Darnold but draft a quarterback at number two, it wouldn't be for the reason you talked about, which is to have the kids sit behind Darnold. I think it would be more that they might be trying to put themselves in that Teddy Bridgewater situation. If you'll recall, they signed Bridgewater, and then after they took Darnold, they showcased Bridgewater in the preseason. He looked good, and somebody ponied up a third. It was the Saints, because they wanted insurance for Drew Brees. If they keep Darnold after drafting a guy at number two, I think that's most likely what the scenario is. It would either be then or at the trade deadline. You would hope that Darnold looks good enough in the preseason that you could deal him and maybe get good value. And this would only be if they don't get the type of trade offers they're looking for before the draft. As far as the second part of the question, the linebackers, we don't know what to expect from C.J. Mosley. I think his coverage ability has been greatly undersold. He's pretty solid in coverage. The question is, of course, after 2 years, what are you really getting from him? So we have no idea. We have to see. The rest of the linebackers are sort of irrelevant, aren't they? They're either free agents or they're Jags that probably aren't going to start. I expect to see a bunch of new faces at linebacker for the Jets, so I wouldn't really worry about that right now.
Yeah, so I'll start by echoing what you said about the lack of usurpers going forward. I am definitely going to miss that. But Peter brings it anyway, and because this is something that I have been thinking about, and I haven't really had the cojones to go ahead and talk about it, tweet it, because I just didn't want everybody taking it 17 different ways that I didn't intend. But it's something I've been thinking about is the Jets don't need to trade Darnold now. Now, especially with the talk of possibly being able to get a late first, it makes it less likely to want to hold on. But they don't need to trade him now. And if they got somebody like Trey Lance, who I absolutely love, but, you know, he played one season at North Dakota State, didn't play all last year. You could go ahead and draft him and then go and say, okay, do what you said or the Teddy Bridgewater thing, or just say, you know, hey, if he's not ready this year, we'll just ride it out with Darnold. And then all your giving there is you miss the chance to bring back that second round pick or a late first for trading for Darnold. But they could do that. It is definitely still a possibility and still an option. I don't think, because I think that they could get, you know, a second round pick or two second round picks or a late first, I wouldn't do that. But there's worse decisions you could make than just saying, hey, draft Trey Lance and then roll with Darnold for one more year, or at least, you know, through training camp and see what happens there. There are worse decisions you can make there. But it's hard with this the Schefter thing about possibly getting a late first-round pick. If you could end up with three first-round picks in this draft, it's hard for me to – that's the thing that's really hanging me up here on being like, yeah, keep Darnold for another year. Who cares? That would be tough to pass up. But I do think that it's a possibility that fans aren't even considering right now, that they could kind of hedge and split the difference there. But I would probably guess it's not going to be the case, but I do think fans need to, like, think that it's a possibility at least.
I think rolling with Darnold through training camp is a possibility. Anything beyond that, you're getting a little dicey. They could go the route of holding on to him and hoping that somebody gets hurt and trading him before the deadline. That's a possibility too. But I think not dealing him at any point after you use the number two pick on a quarterback would be a bad idea because, as you said, then you lose the opportunity to bring back assets. But, Chris, let's get to the second part of the question. What do you think about the linebacker situation?
Yeah, that's actually going to be my next project once I finish going through the Justin Fields and Zach Wilson tape is I'm obviously going to look at the offensive line and the wide receivers, but I want to go through and dig through this draft class to look at linebackers, specifically linebackers that can cover, because this team doesn't have them. Like you said, with CJ Mosley, his reputation, he's a better coverage linebacker, or he was a better coverage linebacker than his reputation would suggest. But the coverage wasn't the strongest part of the game. And the other guys, there's nothing there. This is one of those things, like, people are going to judge this defense next year, obviously, but you got to give Saleh at least 2 years to build the defense in his image. They're not going to be able to make all the changes to their scheme fits and get every player and every – in this one off season, they're just not going to be able to do it all. So who is it that they're going to need to look? I haven't looked at the who's available free agency wise, but they're going to have to need to try to at least draft one linebacker that can cover. You got to start trying to do that right now, because even if we just, said that CJ Mosley will be exactly as good as he was when he last played as coverage, you still need improvement in the other areas there. So that's going to be something in those mid rounds that I fully expect them to do. We'll look to see if they can upgrade that a little bit in free agency, but that's going to be an important thing that Saleh is looking for over these next couple of years, is linebackers that can cover there. And then you're also going to have to, CJ Mosley, like, they're going to, if they're running that wide nine, that's going to help defend against outside runs, but it opens things up on the inside there. And that's where CJ Mosley in his prime, as good as he is, really will help to fill in those gaps there. But they're going to need some other guys to help there. A strong side linebacker to be able to do that. So that is going to be an area that I think that we can see that Saleh and the Jets really attack this offseason and try to severely upgrade, because it's a position that is very much needs to be upgraded.
Next question comes in from Jets Midwest. He says, how does the hiring of Saleh impact the Jets draft strategy beyond the number two overall pick? The easy answer to this is that Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh are going to be looking for players that fit what they want to do. So the impact is that even though you may not necessarily look for a guy that's specifically a fit for your system, you want a guy that's scheme diverse and can fit your system, if that makes any sense. So you want somebody that you know can at least do what you need them to do. And on defense, that means that 4-3 under hybrid, somebody that can perform there. Jeff Ulbrich will obviously have a hand in helping them figure out who to get. Same thing with the offense. You want somebody that is at least malleable to that Shanahan system. So I think that's really where the strategy gets impacted, because if you had somebody that ran a different system, there are certain players that may not fit that wouldn't be as good value as they would be in these particular systems.
Yeah, I'll tell you the most immediate change is when I do these mock drafts now on my phone, I have to actually draft defensive players. I was having a lot of fun before they hired Saleh of just doing mock drafts where I picked all offense, and that's not going to happen. That was never going to happen anyway, but my dream is dead, and there's zero chance that happens now. But yeah, it's really how it's going to come into play is you're going to see more players drafted for specific reasons in that system. They're going to be looking for, more speed rushers to line up on the edge and that wide nine. Like I said, you're going to look for linebackers who can cover and also can fill those gaps inside to help Quinnen Williams inside, because that type of defense really invites offenses to run inside. So you're going to need linebackers who can come in there and fill in the gap. You're going to need cornerbacks who can play that off zone scheme. Those are the types of things you're going to need to look for there. that's what they're going to be looking at identifying. Just like we talked about, Kadarius Toney and Curtis Samuel will fit exactly what they're trying to do on offense. That is what they're going to look for, to try to identify those types of guys to fit exactly the roles that they need to fill on defense. And there's a bunch of those roles that need to be filled. So that when you see these picks at the time when they get picked, there is going to be a reason, like, this guy covers really well, or there's something that they see that's going to work long term in their system.
Next question comes in from Joe Horning. He says, if a corner like Farley or Sertan slipped to the 15 to 20 range, could you see Joe Douglas trying to move up from 23 to get one? I think this really depends on how he ranks the corners, because I personally love J.C. Horn, so if he was still on the board, I'd just wait and hope that he slips to me at 23. But if Robert Saleh, who really likes having that lockdown corner in his system, sees one of those guys as a key to his defense, then it's possible that he could nudge Joe Douglas to trade up for one of them. I think Douglas would probably prefer not to trade up if he doesn't have to. But as we saw with the offensive tackle situation last year, he had multiple deals in place to move up if he needed to. So he'll get aggressive if the situation calls for it. And if Saleh really wants one of those guys, I wouldn't be surprised to see him make a move if one of them drops.
Yeah, I think I'd still be a little surprised to see them do any trading up and that early. You know, I could see them certainly trading up in like the third, fourth, fifth rounds trying to get a guy. I just don't think that they've built all this draft capital to go ahead and spend draft picks to you know, move up a couple spots just to get one cornerback or something. I won't rule it out. I won't say that I'd be completely surprised. I just wouldn't expect that to happen. But yeah, if there's somebody that Saleh or LaFleur identifies as like, this guy will make a huge difference, then I think it's possible. And of course, this is the tricky part about having these conversations, because how far are we talking moving up? How much are you giving up to move? Could I see them, jumping up two spots to go grab a J.C. Horn? Sure. Could I see them jumping 10 spots to do that? No. So I could see them doing a little bit of movement in that late first or second round. But I wouldn't expect them to do any, jump more than like five spots at the most. And I think you're more likely to see them try to trade up, in like the third, fourth, fifth rounds than you would be to see them trade up in the first or second. But again, if it's just two spots away and they say, okay, hey, we can get, a J.C. Horn type or Kadarius Toney on offense, we can do that, and we just give up one of those, give up a fifth round pick. Okay, I can see them doing that. But I think that Joe Douglas is going to try, unless it's for something like Deshaun Watson, I think he's going to try to hold on to most of those picks and not give up the value of having so many picks.
That's going to wrap up part three of the mailbag. Make sure that you're checking out Chris's very big deal work over at JetsInsider.com and following him on Twitter at CNimbly and at JetsInsider. If you haven't given us a 5-star review on iTunes yet, if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd really appreciate it. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts, you know where to go. That's Turn on the Jets Digital and TurnOnTheJets.com.